Hello and welcome to episode 698 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan. I am one of the co-founders here at ETR, as always joined by fellow co-founder Evan Silva. And as we begin to think about 2024 roles, 2024 rankings, one of the most important things I think to understand right now is cut candidates. To discuss this offseason's top 10 or so cut candidates, we're joined by Sam Sherman. You remember him, you love him, you long for him from the Waiver Wire article and show last year. Sam, how's it going?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to talk through some cut candidates.
Good. Also, of course, joined by the one and only Evan Silva. Evan, how's it going today?
It's going great. It's 72 degrees outside, so turn the heat off. And but now it gets cold inside, you know. So I'm rocking the winter vest today, you know. But it's nice outside.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're here to talk about fantasy football in February, so no outside for you today. We're going to actually do top eight offseason cut candidates today. We'll start with number eight. We'll work our way down to number one, the most important spot to watch. And I do think this is valuable on a couple fronts. First, it lets us know what teams think about players and backups. And then it also, prices in these early drafts can flat be wrong. Like last year, we suspected Dalvin Cook would get cut. But in early drafts, people were still taking Dalvin Cook in the fifth, sixth, seventh round. Alexander Mattison was going in the 10th, 11th, 12th. Obviously didn't work out with Madison, but the prices on those guys for much of the offseason was just wrong. Dalvin ends up getting cut in June, goes on to be a backup with the Jets while Madison was the Vikings feature back. And so I do think that there's a lot of spots that we can talk about. We can get an edge by understanding contracts and possible cut candidates right now. Before we get into it here today, two quick reminders. First, the NBA is back from their All-Star break. There is no one on earth predicting player performance in NBA games at the level our guys are. And I don't say that lightly. Dink, Gallagher, the whole team just grinding to a nub 24/7 to stay on top of rotations, injuries, guys resting. If you're interested in NBA DFS or NBA props, head to the subscribe tab or the NBA tab on the site right now. And second, there is plenty of underdog action right now. Our first run of rankings for 2024 best ball are already up. You can upload those directly to Underdog if you're playing the big board or any other contest that they're running. Majors only, PGA, we have rankings for that. If you're a golf sub, the NBA Daily Snake Drafts, you can use our projections there if you're playing those. If you've never tried Underdog, promo code ETR for a matching deposit bonus up to $100. That's promo code ETR at Underdog Fantasy. All right, let's get into it here with our top eight cut candidates. I want to start with one that might be controversial that maybe not a lot of people are talking about, and that's Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett is going to turn 32 years old in September. He's coming off what I thought was a pretty good year, but uninspiring, I would say, not exciting. He carries a $27 million cap hit, does Tyler Lockett, and he has zero guaranteed dollars left on his contract. They also have Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who I thought was underwhelming, but also underutilized last year, only played like 64% of the snaps. So, Sam, what do you think first the chances are the Seahawks do make this move on Tyler Lockett and any other fallout you see from Seahawks stuff?
Yeah, I think on this one, I'd still put the odds fairly low that the Seahawks cut Tyler Lockett. I think a couple reasons. One, you mentioned JSN, and they brought him in last year as a first-round pick, but Tyler Lockett still pretty steadily outperformed JSN across all categories. And it's not just, you know, based on his route share, even on sort of a per route basis, Lockett was still better than JSN. So I think that's one factor. Second, they just committed to Geno Smith this year. They did actually have a way to get out of his contract as well. They decided to push some of that money into the future and commit to him this year. I think it'd be kind of an odd move to commit to Geno and then cut Tyler Lockett. Like I feel like you either go for the full rebuild and get rid of both or keep both. So yeah, just based on that signal, I think what's most likely here is they restructure Lockett and he's back for at least one more season. I do agree though. It's unlikely he's going to be back on this contract he has now. He has a huge cap hit. I think some kind of restructure is on the way here.
Yeah, Evan, I know you've been like a longtime Tyler Lockett fan, like going back 5, 6, 7 years, just being in on Tyler Lockett every single year. And that has mostly paid off. from his raw numbers last year, he seemed to decline a little bit. Underlying numbers, though, were certainly better. Any thoughts on Tyler Lockett's future with the Seahawks?
When you talk about Jaxon Smith-Njigba having an underwhelming year and Tyler Lockett having an underwhelming year and DK Metcalf having an up and down year, you know, they really struggled in the red zone. They struggled to score touchdowns as a team. Geno Smith's touchdown passes went from 30 in 2022 to 20 last year, and his touchdown rate went from 5.2 to 4.0. So, I mean, that's where it stems from, us having this idea that they had an underwhelming year from a fantasy standpoint, and they did, but that's what it stems from. I think that they're going to bring back Tyler Lockett. Right now, they would have to absorb a $19.8 million cap charge in order to release him and only gain $7 million. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm with you. And they also might lose Noah Fant in free agency. So I think that they run it back.
The market, and this is very early, and the market's going to change a ton, but the early market is way out in front on JSN over Lockett. JSN ADP 61.8, Lockett ADP 116. I think that makes sense. But if Lockett's really going to be back, that is a very, very wide gap there between those two.
That's a guy that I'd be drafting in every draft if I was a crazy person who's drafting right now.
All right. Let's go to the Broncos stuff. What a mess they got themselves into. I mean, this Russ Wilson situation, they've already kind of shown their hand that they're going to cut Russ and just eat the contract, which, man, just 2 years ago, March of 22, they give up two first rounders, two second rounders, another late round pick, plus three players, to give Russ $165 million guaranteed, and now they're going to cut him just 2 years later and eat $85 million in dead money. And that's going to ripple through. People are like, oh, the salary cap is fake. That's going to ripple through to the rest of their roster. And they might have to cut someone like Cortland Sutton also to try to deal with all this dead cap stuff. So this trade, and the reason that I think it's maybe the worst trade in NFL history, it's not just that Russ is terrible. It's going to cripple them for years down the line from a cap perspective. So I think the horse is out of the barn on Russ. Sam, would you agree there? And what do you think about the fallout of that for the Broncos?
Yeah, it sounds like Russ is gone. I guess the only interesting thing there is they can't really save any money this year by cutting him. I think at this point, though, it's just dead weight and it's time to move on, even though they don't have any cap savings. I do think they might save some money in like 2025 by cutting him now. So that's probably worth it if they decided they want to move on from him. In terms of Cortland Sutton, I think he's a serviceable player at this point in his career. You know, he had some fantasy success last year, but it really was covered up by a lot of touchdown lipstick. I mean, he didn't put up many yards per game, many receptions per game. He just got lucky on a bunch of touchdowns, which maybe it's not luck. Maybe that's sort of a skill of his, being a contested catch wide receiver. But I think with them, you know, projected to be $20 million over the cap, it makes some sense for them to cut or maybe trade Cortland Sutton. I do think, though, they would probably look first to get some kind of compensation for him before outright cutting him. There's plenty of teams out there that are desperate for wide receivers that maybe would give up a fourth, third round pick for Cortland Sutton at this point. So probably outright cut less likely than some kind of restructure or trade.
I mean, even if Cortland Sutton stays, what's the quarterback situation going to be? They're going to be linked heavily, Evan, to quarterbacks further down the draft board, like Bo Nix, JJ McCarthy, the kid from Tulane. Like, they're going to be linked to all these secondary quarterbacks because they can't get up high enough in the draft to get one of the top three. What do you think about the whole Russ situation, Evan, and the mess the Broncos have gotten themselves into?
I don't think I have anything to add that, you know, hasn't been said before. As Sam pointed out, zero cap savings when they release Russell Wilson. As you mentioned, like, Cortland Sutton got the touchdown lipstick that those Seahawks receivers did not get. And I don't know, they would save $10 million by cutting him. This is, we're recording this on Tuesday. It's the first day where, like, coaches and GMs are speaking at the combine. Yeah. And Sean Payton was talking up Marvin Mims big time. Now, I know some people are going to roll their eyes after last year, but Sean Payton acknowledged like the only thing that was getting in the way of Marvin Mims not having a bigger rookie year was us, as in we didn't give him enough opportunities. And those opportunities are going to come if they move on from Jerry Jeudy, which I think that they definitely will, and certainly if they move on from Courtland Sutton. I mean, Marvin Mims should be an every down player in year two, I think.
Right. And the current
ADP. And also, you mentioned Bo Nix. Actually, Greg Cosell specifically tied. He's like, yo, Bo Nix is a great fit for what Sean Payton does typically on offense.
Current ADP here is Sutton 101, Jeudy 129, who might be gone also. And then Marvin Mims way down at 169. I mean, that's going to rise. If you want closing line value on a wide receiver, Marvin Mims is going to close higher if and when Jerry Jeudy's gone, if and when they address the quarterback position with someone exciting like a Bo Nix or someone like that. All right. Keep it moving here to an easy one, I think. Marquez Valdes-Scantling strikes me as an easy cut. Guy's due $12 million, and he's just, like, bad at football. And I know he had actually some pretty decent games for him down the stretch and in the playoffs, but, gosh, he was bad for so much of the year. This Chiefs team also has major work to do to keep their defense intact from a financial perspective. Now, the problem here, Sam, is that what are they going to do at wide receiver? You know, you can keep drafting wide receivers. That's fine. They have a spotty history of doing so, but you need to replace that kind of outside wide receiver there. I doubt they can afford someone like Mike Evans, even though that would be so exciting to have Mike Evans playing with Patrick Mahomes. What do you think the fallout, or do you agree that MVS is almost certainly gone? And what do you think the Chiefs will do to replace him?
I think he's almost certainly gone on his current contract. I mean, they can get $12 million in cap savings, which with very little in dead cap, I think, if they cut him. So there's no way they're bringing him back on that deal. If you say, hey, they restructure him and bring him back on a heavily reduced deal, I think that's possible. But I think he's probably gone. And then, yeah, I think the approach the Chiefs should take is just keep taking chances on these wide receivers in the late first, second, and third round. You know, I haven't dove that deep into the rookie classes yet, but everyone's saying this is one of the best, deepest wide receiver classes we've had in a while. And it seems like we're on a good streak of having good wide receiver classes. So, you know, I know they missed on Sky Moore. Obviously they missed on trading for Kadarius Toney, but they hit pretty big on Rashee Rice. And I think with their current cap situation, the strategy is just, you know, pay Mahomes, pay their O-line, pay their defense, and keep drafting these wide receivers in the first, second, third round. And I think over the long run, that strategy is going to, you know, look better than it has over the past couple of years, just because some of these guys have missed. But yeah, overall, I do agree. MVS should definitely be gone.
I mean, this is a pretty big role, Evan. Like, MVS is out there a ton with Patrick Mahomes. If they could get someone who could play into that role, it would actually be exciting. Any thoughts on potential replacements for MVS?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly who it was, but I was listening to a tape guy who was talking about when you turn on the All-22 of Marquez Valdes-Scantling, like, there are a lot of plays where he's open and Mahomes is just like, nah. Like, he won't even look at him. I mean, he lost all kinds of trust and faith in him, and I think he's 100% gone. As you mentioned, $12 million in cap room. You know, you clear that, maybe Kelce retires. I don't know. That's 50-50 maybe at best. Chris Jones, you just kind of decide that you can't bring him back. And then you do have enough money for Mike Evans potentially, you know? So, but at the same time, like, again, big day for GMs and coaches talking today at the combine. Jason Light, the Bucs GM, made it sound like they want to make sure that Mike Evans retires as a Buccaneer. But, you know, so we're just talking about hypotheticals, but MVS is good as gone.
I mean, Chiefs wide receivers aren't even getting drafted. Rashee Rice has an ADP of 21. No other wide receivers are even being drafted in the top 200. I mean, people have just given up on secondary wide receivers for Patrick Mahomes. Really interesting storyline to follow this offseason. This one, next one, number five here, it feels like deja vu. We talked a ton last offseason about the potential of Joe Mixon getting cut. There was a lot of smoke around him due to his contract last year, his off-field issues. Ends up taking a pay cut. Bengals shrug off the off-field stuff. Mixon comes back and does his thing. You know, he's not efficient. He's not explosive, but he's reliable and he can carry pretty big volume for this team. Now, the reason I say it's deja vu is because people are again talking about how Joe Mixon could be cut. He's due a $3 million roster bonus on March 17th, which is coming up. They can save $6.1 million against the cap by cutting him. Not a ton. I just keep going back to what I said last year. This is a very small and closing rapidly window for the Bengals to win the Super Bowl. I don't mind messing up my cap for the foreseeable future and going for it if I'm the Bengals, if you guys follow what I'm saying, because I don't think they're going to have that many chances to really go for it with this core. They franchise T. Higgins. He's going to be gone, I think, eventually. So I don't know that if they think Mixon's the best guy for the job, maybe he comes back again, but we'll see. I'd call it 50-50 right now. Sam, what do you think the chances are? Joe Mixon is gone. And then, of course, everybody's excited about Chase Brown, the fifth round rookie. At least the hipsters, the fantasy hipsters are excited about Chase Brown, last year's fifth round rookie.
Yeah, I think it does seem about 50-50. I mean, $6 million of savings, it sounds like a lot of money, but with the new, you know, NFL cap at what, $260 million, it's not like that's some huge chunk of cap, even for a running back. If I was running the Bengals, I think, you know, I would cut Joe Mixon and either, you know, see what you have in Chase Brown, maybe another draft, another running back, or there's tons, you know, this running back free agent class is pretty interesting. You know, I wouldn't want to give a ton of long-term money to Derrick Henry or Austin Eckler, some of these aging veterans, but I'd like to see, you know, one of those veteran running backs for 1 year, yeah, $8-9 million on my roster, overpaying Joe Mixon. I've seen enough of Joe Mixon over the past couple of years. I know he's like trusted and he's a team captain there, but he's just not giving the Bengals much of anything from an explosive play standpoint. And yeah, if I was them, I'd like to see what they could do with, you know, either a better pass catching running back in there or more explosive rusher. But yeah, about 50-50 in terms of odds of him being cut seems about right.
I mean, market is low on Joe Mixon. Even if he stays, I feel like no one wants Joe Mixon anymore. His ADP is 83 overall. Chase Brown's ADP is 107 overall. We've seen this, Evan, where Joe Mixon, no one wants to play him in DFS, even though he's getting 15, 20 touches in one of the best offenses in the league when Joe Burrow was out there, and still nobody wants to click or play this guy. The Bengals seem to like him, though. Any thoughts on the Mixon-Chase Brown stuff, Evan?
Yeah, I would have cut Joe Mixon before last year because, I mean, as Sam mentioned, he has not shown enough from a production standpoint. But they are running it back. I mean, they just franchised T. Higgins.
Yeah,
they're getting, you know, Joe Burrow is going to be back. He should be back at, you know, full blast. So, yeah, I actually think it might be higher than 50-50 that they keep Joe Mixon. I think the Chase Brown long-term at 209 pounds projects as more of a change of pace back, and that's what we saw from him last year. They didn't really trust him to run pass routes. They got him involved in the screen game. He had some massive plays on screens, but I don't think that they trust him in pass protection or anything like that, and they do trust Joe Mixon.
I mean, to Sam's point, it might not be that much more expensive to go out and get a Derrick Henry or an Austin Eckler than it is to keep Joe Mixon, right?
Those guys are not going to get any money, by the way.
They're going to get one year, right?
Like all these running backs that played on franchise tags.
Yeah.
Eckler.
Yeah.
Jacobs.
Pollard.
Pollard.
Barkley.
Barkley. They all sucked.
Yeah.
You know, they no, man, the running backs are going to get no – it's going to be worse than ever.
So, like, what I'm saying – yeah, and I agree. Yeah. What I'm saying is that you could get Derrick Henry on a one-year, $9 million deal, like Sam
maybe
said.
Maybe even less. Maybe. I think it might be less than that.
And I'd rather have that than Joe Mixon, you know, so
– yeah.
Yeah. If the Bengals are listening, we're available for hire. Okay. This one people are going to roll their eyes at, but number four on the list here is – Jonnu Smith, and we'll get to the coaching changes pod a little bit later. But with King Dolt, Arthur Smith gone, we should see a more modern NFL offense out of the Falcons, which I think will probably mean fewer two tight end sets, which means saving $6.5 million by cutting Jonnu Smith makes some sense. And so you're going to get this steam on Kyle Pitts again. And I know no one wants to hear about Kyle Pitts' steam. The steam is going to come from coaching change, Jonnu Smith perhaps gone, and Kyle Pitts saying he played all of last year at less than 100% due to the PCL, MCL stuff. And so you're going to get real steam on Kyle Pitts here. I'll start with you here this time, Evan. If Jonnu Smith is gone, do you think that actually matters for Kyle Pitts?
Not really. I think that what matters is an upgrade in quarterback play, a team more committed to throwing the football, a team more willing to use Kyle Pitts' health. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's number one.
Yeah.
And then Kyle Pitts being used in a fashion where he's not running routes against cornerbacks, where he's running routes in the middle of the field against linebackers and safeties and smaller slot cornerbacks, and you know, where he's used as a mismatch weapon.
Yeah.
And so hopefully the new coaching staff does that, because Arthur Smith didn't do any of that. I mean, that's five factors right there working directly against Kyle Pitts.
Yeah. It's funny because the people drafting now are like the sickest people, and they are still kind of out on Kyle Pitts. 92 overall is Kyle Pitts' ADP. Sam, what do you think the chances are Jonnu is gone, and any Pitts thoughts here early on?
Yeah, I think the chances of Jonnu being gone are pretty high. I think he's overpaid sort of as a tight end, too.
And that's Arthur Smith, right? Arthur Smith's dude, too, you know?
Yeah.
Back to the Tennessee days they were together.
Right.
Yeah, the only question I have, I guess, is like, I agree they're probably going to run a lot of one tight end sets, 11 personnel. Can Kyle Pitts like play in line in 11 personnel consistently? That's what I'm worried about. Like his run blocking is so bad. Like, I guess I just question, like, I don't know. I question a bit, not his talent as a pass catcher, but his talent as a true tight end. And can you really utilize him the same way you utilize Tyler Higbee, right? You know, where you can be on the field for every single run blocking snap. So that's my question with Kyle Pitts is, can he be on the field enough to get a high enough route rate? I think that partially was an Arthur Smith problem over the past couple of years, but also honestly, it was just partially a Kyle Pitts not being a good enough run blocker problem. And you want your tight ends.
You know, coming out of Florida, people said that he was like an underrated blocker. So, yeah. I don't know what his PFF grades or anything like that are, you know, as a blocker, like,
last year they were really bad. I think worst tight end. But before that they were middling. So
middling would be great.
Yeah, I mean, middling would be great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the problem that coaches see with Pitts, and maybe Arthur Smith sees this, is what Evan's alluding to. He can't be corner, so he can't play wide receiver outside. And then he's not a great blocker either, so you can't play him in line. So like all you can do with Kyle Pitts is have him try to win against safeties and linebackers as on obvious passing downs, you know? And so I understand the concerns there. I do think Jonnu being gone matters maybe a little bit more than you guys do. It just gives whoever gives the new coaching staff fewer options to take Pitts off the field. But
totally fair. Yeah. Totally fair.
All right.
I mean, Jonnu Smith has had years where at PFF he was like the worst graded blocking tight end.
Yeah. So he's pretty small. He's pretty undersized as well. Yeah.
All right. Number three is these Chargers wide receivers, Mike Williams and or Keenan Allen. I'll start with Keenan. I kind of think they're going to make it work with Keenan. I know he has a $34 million cap number. They're way over the cap. He's 32 years old. He's still so good. And like, they're almost certainly going to get rid of Mike Williams. I'll get to that in a second. Getting rid of both those guys at the same time strikes me as like too much. So I think they'll try to figure out a way to make Keenan work. I'll let Sam comment on that in a second. The Mike Williams, though, unfortunately, I think big Mike Williams is like almost definitely gone. The Chargers are already way over the cap. He's coming off a torn ACL. They can cut him and save $20 million. So it's just a really hard spot to see big Mike Williams coming back to the Chargers. Sam, would you agree with that? Keenan, I think back, big Mike almost definitely gone. And then you still have some cap concerns around the Chargers as well as they try to fill out their wide receiver core with the new coaching staff. So yeah, Sam, any thoughts on all this Chargers wide receiver mess?
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. I would put Big Mike's odds of being gone or at really, really high. Or at least if he's not gone, he's going to be restructured. So his cap hit is way lower than it is currently. I agree with you on Keenan Allen. I mean, he was on an insane 17-game pace last year. He was on pace for 141 catches and 1,625 yards before he got hurt. So he's just so, so productive that even at this huge cap hit, even at his advanced age for a wide receiver in the NFL, I don't think you cut Keenan Allen. It just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. And I think the other thing that makes Mike Williams' odds higher of being gone is they have this number 5 overall pick. And it could be, you know, they certainly could take an offensive tackle. I've seen that mocked a lot for the Chargers. But staring at them at number 5 might be Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, Brock Bowers. Like, they could add another exciting pass catcher to this offense at a far cheaper price than what they have to pay Mike Williams. So I think that adds to his chances of, you know, likely being gone.
The problem, Evan, is that they whiffed on Quentin Johnston. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Josh Palmer can play probably better than the market does, but he's certainly no star. And so if you let go of Mike Williams, you have 32-year-old Keenan Allen. To Sam's point, you might be in a really strong position to draft a wide receiver early. Any thoughts on Chargers without likely without Mike Williams here?
Yeah, you know, Big Mike lost his support system. He lost the guy that drafted him, Tom Telesco, and he lost Kellen Moore, who built the offense around him really the past 2 years. Obviously wanted to build the offense, the passing offense around him again this year, but he goes out with the year-ending ACL. So I think the odds of him coming back are low, but they are so thin at receiver. I think you have to almost operate as if Quentin Johnston is not on the team. I mean, not that he's going to get cut, but like yeah. He's not a factor in your draft decision making.
Yeah.
Keenan is getting up there and he could still play, but he's getting up there. I think Josh Palmer is a really good number four receiver, but then you have, that leaves you with just Keenan Allen as a starting caliber receiver. And he's what, 33, 34. So that's one guy and he's old. Yeah. So, and, you know, I think that they have needed to add speed for so long on the perimeter. They got to take one of these receivers at number five overall, I think. But you know, what I'm trying to get at is that I think that they should try as hard as they can. And Mike Williams may be in position to do this because the receiver, the incoming wide receiver class is really good. And there's a bunch of pretty decent receivers on the free agent market. Mike Williams, it might be in his best interest to take a really big pay cut and come back. I actually think that would be best for both sides.
Interesting. We'll talk more about Mike Williams on next episode when we talk about PUP candidates. He is, of course, coming off of the ACL. Current ADP has Keenan Allen, 37 overall, Big Mike, 108, Quentin Johnston, 149, Josh Palmer, 163. So, yeah. Not very expensive is anyone other than Keenan right now. Let's go to number two, the Saints. And like, this is the poster child of the people who say the salary cap doesn't matter. You can do whatever you want. The Saints have been like a cap mess for a while now. I think people have speculated that Alvin Kamara, Taysom Hill, and Michael Thomas could all be cap casualties. The one that seems most likely to be a cap casualty is Michael Thomas. Seems almost certain that he is gone. I'm just not sure that they'll miss him that much, period. I mean, you have Olave, you have Rashid Shaheed. I think they're both awesome. And then you go to Clint Kubiak, who I think can scheme stuff for those guys better than the previous offensive staff could. So I actually don't think they'll miss Michael Thomas at all. No brainer to cut him. The other guys are tougher sells for me to cut, Kamara and Taysom. Obviously still very strong contributors. Sam, any thoughts on the Saints situation right now?
Yeah, I think, yeah, Thomas, we maybe don't need to spend too much time on him. It sounds like the reporting there is pretty solid that he's going to be gone and he hasn't contributed since what, I don't know, 2018 at this point. Yeah. Seriously. 2019.
Yeah.
The Kamara one is interesting. It hasn't really been speculated much, you know, people close to the Saints. So I tend to believe it's unlikely to happen. They could save nearly $12 million by designating him as a post June 1st cut, which to me is kind of appealing. I mean, I know he still proved he can absorb a lot of volume and he's still pretty talented as a pass catcher, but he was near the bottom in most advanced rushing metrics last year. And to me, it just seems like a ton of money to pay a guy who's an aging running back who is no longer a good rusher. But yeah, I don't know. It sounds like he's likely to be back, but yeah.
What are you saying? I would just add that if they do move on from Kamara, that like the thing I said at the beginning about like letting you know what they think about other players, that would let me know that they really like Kendre Miller. Cause I think everyone knows Jamal Williams can't play. So if they were to move on Kamara, I'd be like, oh, they're real excited about Kendre Miller here. But yeah, I it's hard for me to see it on Kamara. The exciting one,
like they're excited about Kendre last year,
right?
By the way, yeah,
I think Evan, the guy that we should be excited about is Rashid Shaheed and Olave, to be honest. I want to talk about Olave more in the coaching change episode. But yeah, just give Rashid Shaheed more routes, get Olave more layup targets, and I think they'll be totally fine at wide receiver. Maybe that's too hot of a take because they're not very deep there. But yeah, what do you think about Saints without Michael Thomas or any other Saints stuff?
Yeah, everybody knows that Jamal Williams can't play except for NFL coaches.
Yeah.
Kendra Miller, if he had shown just a little bit more as a rookie, I think that it would be more likely that Alvin Kamara, that the Saints might move on from him, but he just didn't. Apparently, he was awesome on the practice field. He looked great in camp when he was healthy. I ran this stuff by, but he just, I mean, he didn't really do anything in the real games.
Yeah.
I ran this stuff by Underhill. He thinks that Michael Thomas is definitely gone. I like that you mentioned this, Sam, and I went through the same thing when I was putting together my free agent tracker, which should be up on the site today, where I'm just like, I'm just going to have a list of, you know, all the free agents and then tying them to the teams that signed them and the contract details. But what was I going to say? Oh, I ran it all by under. Yeah, no, the contract situation with Michael Thomas is really weird. I already have him on the free agent list. Like he, yeah. And that's not because I'm forecasting a cut. I don't even think they have to cut him. It's like a void year,
right,
or something like that. He's gone. Also, he has been like beefing with Derek Carr on Twitter or something. Really? Have you guys seen this? I don't know. I've been trying to stay off Twitter since the Super Bowl for mental health reasons. But apparently they had some – Michael Thomas has like been ripping Derek Carr on Twitter.
Yeah, he's been like accusing him of like throwing hospital balls and that type of thing.
That's awesome. Yeah, so Michael Thomas definitely not coming back to the Saints.
Yeah. Olave, current ADP is around 26 overall, similar to where he was going last year. Shaheed, 123 overall, is one that I'm interested in. And Kendra Miller, 142 overall. Even if Alvin Kamara comes back, Kamara's at 64 overall. I still like Kendra Miller at 142 overall there on initial ADP. All right.
And they finally, I just noticed one last thing. They Underdog finally listed Taysom Hill as a quarterback this year. So gone are the days where you can draft Taysom Hill as a tight end, which is kind of sad. That worked out pretty well for
Underdog
a while.
Underdog hates fun.
All right. RIP Taysom tight end eligibility on Underdog. Last potential cut to get here today is Nick Chubb. Now, this is a confusing one because we're going to have to spend a lot of time on his injury, and we're going to be doing an injury episode next. But just to be clear on the injury, he had two surgeries to repair the knee that he blew out in that September game against the Steelers. And by the way, I believe that is the same knee that he blew out in 2015 when he was at Georgia. So we're talking about two very, very major knee injuries to a running back on the same knee. He has a $15 million cap hit. I think the Browns have conceded that he's not going to be ready for week one. He seems like such a good dude. The team seems to love him. I think they called him like a one in a billion back or something like that, the GM did. Is he still a one in a billion back, though, after these latest knee surgeries? And can you afford to eat a $15 million cap hit when you're absorbing this ridiculous Deshaun Watson contract also as the Browns? So I think he'll probably be back, but I understand the case for letting Nick Chubb go. Sam, thoughts on the Chubb situation?
Yeah, I think his odds of coming back are tied to his willingness to accept a pay cut. And yeah, I think that sucks. I mean, Nick Chubb is an awesome player. Obviously nobody wanted to see that happen to him last year, but it's just such a huge cap hit for a running back coming off that injury that I do think the Browns have a lot of leverage to sort of force him to restructure and take a pay cut. I do think that, Chubb has some leverage more on sort of the fandom side of things. I think it's going to look pretty bad from like a PR perspective to outright cut Chubb from the Browns perspective. I mean, he's a fan favorite running back. He suffered this really gruesome injury and he's working really hard to come back from it. So I think sort of that's a leverage that he has, is that it's going to look bad for them to cut him. And I guess the last thing I'll say is, like, if there's any running back who's going to, come back from this crazy injury, Nick Chubb is a freak athlete. He did come back from this injury a similarly horrific injury in college. So sometimes these absolute freak of nature running backs can come back from these type of things and still be good. So yeah, all in all, to say, I think I agree with you, Adam. He's likely to be back, but on a reduced contract, I think.
I thought last year, Jerome Ford looked pretty good. And Jerome Ford was one of my highest owned players in best ball, not because I was predicting Nick Chubb to get hurt, just because I thought Ford would play on pass downs and maybe siphon some stuff off. Also, Jerome Ford's ADP is currently 132 overall right now. Evan, any thoughts on this whole Chubb situation for the Browns?
In January, Browns GM Andrew Berry on Nick Chubb. Nobody wants to see that carry in Pittsburgh. He had be the last carry he has for the Cleveland Browns. We obviously will work to keep him with the team. That sounds like they're going to approach him about a contract adjustment. They probably already have.
Yeah.
It's weird. Torn ACL and torn MCL, but two surgeries. The quotes from the Browns after the second surgery, the Browns were optimistic that Nick would be able to return to play during the 2024 season. Like, he's going to start on PUP, it sounds like, and he's going to have to do a contract adjustment. That would be my tentative forecast for Nick Chubb, but I do think he'll be back with the Browns. But Jerome Ford, good chance to open the season as the Browns starter.
Yeah, I'd probably be higher than market right now on Jerome Ford, where he's going at 132 overall for this Browns team. We'll talk more about Nick Chubb on the next episode, which will be PUP injury candidates. Any cut candidates that we didn't mention here, Sam? By the way, Sam's full article touching on all this stuff, plus a bunch of guys we didn't touch on, is up on the site right now. You guys can check that out. But yeah, there's other guys, Sam. I know you mentioned Gallup in your article, Zay Jones. I've seen some people speculate on Aaron Jones. Anyone else you want to highlight as a potential cut candidate?
Yeah, I think the Cowboys situation is interesting. Both Brandon Cooks and Michael Gallup look like cut candidates to me. Both underperformed last year, and they could save some money by cutting one or both of those guys. I think Darren Waller is an interesting one to throw out. They can save a decent chunk of money from cutting him. I think the reason they're likely not to cut him is, what is their alternative if they cut Darren Waller? Like, look at the Giants wide receiver depth chart right now. It's pretty ugly. So I think, you know, they're going to try to run it back one more time with Daniel Jones and Waller and see if that works. But yeah, those, you can check out the article. A ton of other names like that you probably haven't thought about, like Jeff Wilson, Samaje Perine, those type of guys are highlighted in the article, but that's probably all I have to mention today.
I got a few.
Go ahead.
Hunter Renfro, cutting him saves $8.2 million against the cap. There's no ties there. I mean, those left with Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, he's gone. He's gone for sure.
He's gone. Allen Robinson, he's gone. He was like a lead blocker for the Steelers last year. Cutting him saves $10 million against the cap. Mo Alie-Cox saves $6 million against the cap. I think Mo Alie-Cox is a decent player, but like, this is a way that they can save a bunch of cap and whittle down their tight end carousel, where they would play like four guys in the same game. That could help a guy like Will Mallory, who I think is interesting, a fifth-round pick last year who flashed a little bit as a rookie. CJ Ozoma saves $5.3 million against the cap. He's as good as gone from the Jets. Zay Jones would save $4.2 million against the cap. You know, he's not very good at the game. Nyheim Hines would save $4.7 million against the cap for the Bills, and Deontay Hardy would save $4.1 million against the cap for the Bills, and I think that both of those guys are gone as well. Russell Gage saved $6.4 million against the cap for the Buccaneers.
Yeah, the Zay Jones one was one that I thought maybe we could talk about, but
Calvin, I mean, they like him enough that he may very well be back, but I mean, they could save a lot of money by cutting
him. Sure. I think it can come down to how much Calvin Ridley can command, right? Calvin Ridley's going to be a free agent, and I think they want to retain Calvin Ridley. He's going to be expensive, even though he wasn't that great for much of last year. Current ADP on that is Ridley, 56, Christian Kirk, 63, Zay Jones way down at 179. All right. That is going to do it for this look at off-season cut candidates. Sam, tell the people where they can find you if you would like to be found.
Yeah, you can find me on X or Twitter, whatever we're calling it these days, at Sherman_FFB. And yeah, as I mentioned, this article is up on the site. I will be posting off-season articles throughout the off-season at Established the Run, so you can find my writing there.
Yes. Be sure you're following Sam on the Twitter machine, of course, at Adam Levitan, at Evan Still, if you're serious about fantasy football. And if you're listening to a fantasy football podcast in February, I suspect you indeed are serious about fantasy football, you need to be on Twitter and following us. Also, there's going to be YouTube content this offseason that is not on this audio feed. Be sure you're subscribed to our YouTube channel. It is indeed free. Again, there will be content and shows on YouTube that does not hit the audio feed if you're listening to that now. All right, we'll be back tomorrow, likely, with PUP injury candidates, starting to think about timelines on guys when we can expect them to be back on the field. For Sam, for Evan, for producer Luke, for producer Ryan, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.